Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video because that's what he's like. Vilmos still working on the website. He does the Jackie Cation store website. I just had it redone by Promotional Rescue, Melanie VC, but promotionalrescue.com did the new website. Vilmos still does the store website, JackieCationStore.com. All you can go to JackieCation.com and see whatever you'd like. Me doing stand-up, where I'm doing stand-up. Please come out and see live shows. You can see the new special. You can see the new old videos. You can see, you can get merch if you want. There's a Dork Forest t-shirt. There's a new beanie because I have a new joke about bees. And so there'll be a new t-shirt. And for the holidays, you can indeed get yourself t-shirts or hats or anything like that. It is November and December, so I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest. Normally, I say donate to the Dork Forest as much as you'd like. But in November and December, take that money and donate locally to a food bank in your neighborhood. So feedingamerica.org is a way that you can look up your local food bank. You just put your zip code in. You could also Google the words food bank and the name of your town. And that's what I recommend you do globally too. If you're in Australia or Europe or Africa or South America, wherever you are, please. Iceland. I have listeners all over the world, you guys. So Patrick Brady, Mike Rickberg. That's who I forgot. Mike Rickberg wrote and sang the intro song. He will sing the Mexican hat dance at the end of the program. And there's lots of episodes. So feel free to scroll back through dorkforest.com. You could check out my Tumblr account. There is a Facebook group called Dork Forest Rangers. But my Tumblr account has essentially the fan favorites of the shows for the last 18 years. And I don't think it's actually the whole 18 years because the first 3 years were poorly recorded. And so if you go to bandcamp.thedorkforest.com, you can see I curated that first 3 years into 17 of my favorite episodes. There's also a storytelling album on my Bandcamp, and there is just some loose episodes that you can buy for a dollar, I think, that were live. Anyway, a lot of information. Let's get into the show. Hello and welcome to my Garage Rangers of the Dork Forest. We have a returning guest, and I appreciate her so much, even though I forgot to get all of the, it's your TikTok, which is blowing me away currently. But Virginia Jones, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
What's the handle?
Oh, it's Badinia, B-A-D-I-N-I-A. That is where you can find my TikTok and my Insta and my website and just every dang thing.
Every dang thing at Badinia. So, which is interesting because when I type Virginia, I often type Badinia. Right. That's the typo because of how
because of
quirky.
That.
Because of the way keyboards are set up. Nerd. Keyboard nerd. Welcome back to the program. You're at a comedy festival, I believe. Virginia Jones.
Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, at the Ha Ha Harvest Comedy Festival. We are finishing up. And then I have one more show tomorrow that's just Free Bird show
in town.
Mm-hmm. And then it's very funny. Very grateful. First of all, it's very nice to be featured in a festival and flown in and got a hotel room and paid and all that stuff. That's great. But they did, you know, they booked my flights and they were like, well, it was cheaper to just fly you home on Tuesday. So that's when you're coming. I'm like, all right.
Oh,
they're like,
oh, so you're in for another 2 days.
Yeah, just chilling. Just boots
but
up.
But did they have? Did they cover the hotel? Did the festival cover the hotel?
Okay. I need you to repeat it because I lost it.
Oh, there you go. Did they cover the hotel?
They did.
They
did.
I don't understand how it's cheaper.
No, it couldn't possibly be cheaper. Yeah. No. The hotel art is a boat, a sailboat. It's the only hotel art in here, but it's very nice. I have a living room. I have a turntable. It's all very important.
That seems great. Are you staying at that weird hotel that is attached to like an old bridge town?
Okay, so that Ace Hotel has become the Jupiter Hotel.
Right.
And this Ace Hotel is the downtown Ace Hotel that is not attached to a bar where you will hear noise till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sure. Sometimes they give you earplugs.
Yeah, we're covered. We're covered in all things. So it's been really
Portland. Yeah.
It's been really Portland. It's been really fun. It's been a minute since I've been back. Nice to see people. Ron Lynch, Lizzie Cooperman here, all fine folks.
Oh, that's a fun lineup.
And then you did it last year.
Did I?
Well, someone said, yeah, last year we had Jackie Cation and they were telling great stories about your accomplishments and wonderfulness.
Good
Maybe
for
it
me.
Was 2 years ago.
Turns out it's a blur. but I'll go to Portland any time of the day or night. I was thinking about Powell's.
I'm across the street.
Powell's
is right there. I can see it from my window.
It's right there. You guys, if you haven't been to Portland, and there's no way to not be told if you go to Portland to go to Powell's, but it is literally, I think, my favorite bookstore in the country. Just because of organizationally, you can find whatever you want. Mm-hmm. It has a coffee shop, always a plus. And it has a staff that is just everywhere. There's staff.
Well-read and
really,
helpful.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're well-read and helpful. So, and it's not that I don't like the Strand, except for the Strand is not as well-organized. Just possibly because it's bigger. God knows. But they have money. They could organize it.
I think New York likes things to be a little bit ramshackle. That's just how they prefer it.
Well, and I like the Iliad here. I love a great deal. But it can, and they have just expanded and rearranged. And so as much as I love, yeah, they literally don't have a romance section, which Powell's does.
Yeah.
Because there's a new thing happening in romance. I might want to do my own fucking dork for us, Jackie, because I've already taken up 5 minutes of yours. So
tell me about the new thing in romance.
There's a thing called mass paperback size, and then there's trade paperback size. Romance, westerns, horror, mysteries are often done in mass paperback size. And they fit in the racks in a certain way. Trade paperback, mysteries have gone. There's a lot more mysteries in trade paperback now. And, but horror and westerns still rocking a mass paperback. And now they're moving romance into mass paperback. I think because of the success of Bridgerton, the TV show, people don't like to be seen reading a romance novel. I get that. Been there, lived it, got over it, and still to some extent will fold the cover back because
it's just
like
don't want people to know that you're horny on the bus.
Exactly. No one wants to know my horn job activities. If you're watching porn on the airport, put the blinders up. I don't want to see it. So, but it's hard to judge a book by its cover. If the covers are changed. And but quite honestly, I've kind of perfected judging a book by its cover in the romance novel genre. Though I will say, and we just keep talking about me, Virginia, first 10 minutes, just Jackie talking about romance novels, because for some reason I tend to read them in spates, like sort of. And I'm in a place right now where I'm reading a lot of romance novels, and they sell them in grocery stores and drugstores. because of old-timey reasons of finance. Mm-hmm. They were first released in grocery stores because they were written by women for women about women.
And that's where women were.
And that's where women were, and that's where women could hide buying them, because it could be worked into the grocery budget. And so you can still find them at grocery stores and drugstores. It's great. And I bought one at a Rite Aid. I don't know which Rite Aid, but whatever it was, it turns out it was a historical romance, which is my jam. Often a Regency romance set between the late 1700s and about 1820, also my jam. It was, and I think I explained this to Lori at one point in the other podcast I'm in, but it was about a trans woman.
Oh wow!
And what is great about romance novels, especially historical romance novels, the acknowledgement that everybody was there. All the people were there.
All the people have always been there. Right?
All the people have always been there. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was, there were always gays. There were, the gays were there, you guys, back in the day. The trans were there. Mm-hmm. And so I read it, and it wasn't my porn.
Right.
But it was fascinating and pretty well written. So, so it was funny. Like, there was... A romance novel does not have to be super funny to be funny. It's sort of like when you hear your boss.
It's just enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when you hear somebody who isn't supposed to be funny. It makes you laugh.
It's like the Southwest Airlines people.
Yes.
Wouldn't kill in the clubs. In the plane, it's great.
In the plane, I've laughed at many a Southwest announcement. Yes.
On the Regency tip, I'm going through, speaking of spates, I am in a big Jane Austen reread.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm doing it all. I'm doing Mansfield Park. I'm doing the big ones. I'm doing the little ones. I'm doing Emma. And so all of my life now is just women in Empire waist dresses running from room to room, wondering if someone's going to propose to them. And it's wonderful. Item one, Mr. Darcy is my ideal man. I will accept nothing less.
Interesting.
Jane Austen is so funny. Like, I laugh out loud reading her.
Right, right.
Because she's so dry and so mean sometimes.
It's snarky, dry, and it comes, you know, she's been described, by the way, in the historical romances that I've read, because she is often referenced. In many of these books, because of course
these are romance novels.
They are, and they are not historical romance novels. They are contemporary romance novels.
Yes,
she was writing the Harlequin romance of its time, and she was fucking nailing it.
Yeah,
because but they're referenced sometimes as how people, because the reviews of Jane Austen when Jane Austen wrote. They were successful, but they weren't wildly successful until after her death. She didn't make a lot of money. She made okay money at near the end of her death, but she spent most of her life traveling because she was a single lady. She couldn't have her own household. So had to travel to different relatives and live with them for months at a time. And, but she was described as, essentially, people would describe her writing as, well, they're about people we know. It's just like rich people writing about rich people, except for she was rich, but she wasn't independent.
She wasn't rich. Right. Right. Yeah. She wasn't. Yeah. She didn't have her own estate. Meow, meow. But yeah, it is definitely, it's the ultimate rich people problems books.
Oh, like, very much
The people who they're feeling so bad for, they're like, and can you believe she only has £5,000 a year to live on? My God, what does she live in, the stables?
Right. When the average income of someone in England at that time was about 18 to 20 pounds a year.
Right.
And so if he has £5,000 a year, things are going well.
But like from a feminist standpoint, you know, people like you can make fun of the Jane Austen novels because everyone's so worried about getting married. But like you say, you could not live independently. You could not have a house. You couldn't work. I was just not on the table for you at your rank, you know, in social class. Like this was the only way they were going to move out of their parents' house. That was
right. The only way to get away from your parents and your brothers was to literally put your hands into some other dude's hands. And yeah. And, but at least it was a dude that you might want to touch.
Yeah.
And,
couple years anyway.
For a couple of years. Right. You guys, so we started out real briefly with a little Jane Austen romance novel dork out. And, Maria Bamford, by the way, read an amazing book that she told me she would lend to me and then gave it away. But,
yes,
oh don't think I'm not bitter. And but it was about how Jane Austen and other writers and how women made money back in that time. So it was a very interesting book. I would love to tell you the name of it and the author. We'll try to get back to you by the time we're in the notes.
One time I was talking to Maria's very funny, very wonderful husband, Scott. And he said, we were talking about David Bowie, who, as you know, is also an interest for me.
Oh, yes. That's a previous episode of The Dark Forest.
That's right. And he said, I just read a really awesome biography of Bowie where they interviewed a bunch of his like friends and family members and everybody he's ever been in a band with. And he said, but I don't know if Maria's already put it in the giveaway box. And like, there was real fear in his eyes. He's like, I want it. He's like, let me go see if I still have it. And he did retrieve it and it was fantastic. But like, yes, as soon as the book is completed, it goes in the little free library. It's just a constant. Yeah.
Yeah. Constant movement. Have you ever been Dan Browned? Have you heard that joke of hers? Cause she's got to the free library. She's like, have you ever been Dan Browned? Throw away your own trash.
Okay. There's a couple free libraries in my neighborhood, and one of them is my favorite. And I'm going to tell the shortest version of this because I do want to talk about other stuff. But so I've got the real on Silver Lake Reservoir. There's the real white lady one, and it's a lot of books about how to decenter ourselves from racial conversations. And there's cookbooks and there's decorating books. Okay.
Okay.
That's always there.
But is How to Be an Anti-Racist cookbooks and decorating books?
Yes.
Oh, that really speaks to a very specific
human. Yes. Yoga books. It's the Rich White Ladies of Silver Lake. That's their box. Then there's another one that frequently has super weird art books, super weird music books, Jackie. Sometimes publishers' galleys of super weird books.
Oh, wow.
And I found a postcard in one book and it had a person's name on it. And I'm like, well, I have to figure out who is putting these books in this library.
Because you want to be friends or?
I just want to know exactly. Not necessarily because I want to meet this person or hang out with this person, but I want to solve the mystery because it's like, it's clearly from one person's collection. A lot of LA comedy books. But I found a postcard in one book and it said, oh, Tosh, I thought you would enjoy this. And I'm like, well, that's not a very common name. And then I was watching, and then I found a book on Sparks, which is a very weird band. And it's a very weird book and I enjoyed it very much. And then I was watching the documentary that Edgar Wright did about Sparks. One of the interviewees is a guy, Tosh Berman. I'm like, this is Tosh Berman's box. And I was right. He lives in Silver Lake. He has a publishing house, like a small like art publishing house. I solved a little Nancy Drew mystery. I'm so pleased with myself.
Yes. And that guy listens to this podcast. And we'd like to say, Tosh.
Hi, Tosh Berman.
Hi. And you're being monitored as far as what you
Tosh, it turns out. I loved everything. The Momus books are so good.
Whatever you've enjoyed and then passed on to people are appreciated by one Virginia Jones. Okay, now here's your dorkdom, which I didn't know existed. That the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy TV series.
It's my dorkdom is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy end of sentence. All of it.
Oh, there you go.
Radio, book, movie, Infocom, ooh, interactive fiction game. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
So in the beginning, my dad, when the books, when Hitchhiker's Guide made a big splash in the States in the early 1980s, when I was alive, my dad brought home Hitchhiker's Guide and The Restaurant at the End of the Universe, the first and second books in the trilogy that eventually became five books.
Right.
Which is not what a trilogy is really supposed to be.
No, no. And he knew it. He knew it, Douglas Adams. He knew it.
And so my dad, I think I was 9 or 10, maybe a little bit older. And my dad said, I'm going to read one. You're going to read the other. Whoever wins, he's like, he just gave me this book. And he's like, we're going to read these. And then whoever finishes it first takes the other person out for ice cream. But honestly, it was always going to be him because I didn't have any money. But
right. You were a child.
I was a child. But so, and like a lot of people with extremely weird relationships with their dads, I imprinted on this book like a baby duck. And I've read it a million times. I've read everything ancillary to it. I've listened to the BBC radio shows. I've even survived watching the television show. Everything. And it keeps getting richer and more amazing. And like, I have a big dorkdom about Douglas Adams in general, but it's easy to center.
Did you read Last Chance to See?
Yes. That is one of my favorite. That is one of my favorite books of his. Last Chance to See is a book.
I did not see him do a reading, but I was in the bookstore, but we couldn't see him because it was packed.
I met him. Last Chance to See is one of my favorite books. I'm also an animal rights person and vegan person.
I believe you're a vegan person.
Yes.
You know good vegan restaurants, which is they're even better and better every time I go out. I'm like, this is less and less like not food every time. When yeah. I like vegetables, we don't have to make everything like yams don't have to have the consistency of shrimp, but good for you. Good for you.
So that book is also a big influence on my life. But so for the listener, Last Chance to See was Douglas Adams traveling the world with David Cowardine and documenting animals that are very rare and like who are dwindling down. And many of them are officially extinct now.
Yeah.
Because that book
was written, I think, in the middle 90s published.
Yeah. And the Kakapo, they can't find a whole lot of Kakapo. When I was in Yangtze in China, I asked people about the Yangtze River dolphin, and they're like, effectively, no, he's not around. So Douglas Adams, super amazing thinker, super into tech, super into nature. And I met him one time when I was probably 15. He was touring with one of the Dirk Gently books.
Ah, not as good for me. I love The Hitchhiker's Gently. I think the first one was good, and that
first
was about
really
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the Dirk Gently, I remember them with less fondness, but honestly, every time I reread them, they get a little bit better, especially first one.
Good.
I will say, like, the Salmon of Doubt, like some of the post-mortem books that are assembled out of notes. It's kind of like when Netflix made the season of Arrested Development. It's like, here's like a pastiche of things you like about something you liked. It's fine. You know?
Okay. That's an excellent review of all things that have been rebooted. And you're like, that actually wasn't, it's almost what I loved about Futurama.
It's almost, exactly. It's almost the flavor. It has the smell of it. It has the appearance. But maybe it's like a hologram. It's like there's just not a lot of depth to it.
Right. So let's talk Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which, by the way, was first published in 1979. Mm-hmm. I was 14, and I read it, I think, about 2 years later, 3 years later. But when
Perfect
I was
time.
Still into sarcasm, there's a window. If you haven't read it, you might think to yourself, I get it. It's sarcastic. But if you didn't know a lot about sarcasm, and it was the greatest book in the world because it was so good, I think.
And it's a very British kind of dry sarcasm. I mean, it's not unlike, Jane Austen, I would say. There's through lines there.
It's a glimpse. It's a glimpse. It's a glimpse into a different society for sure.
But, you know, Douglas Adams was also a giant sci-fi head and person. And this is the first attributed to be the first comedy sci-fi, the first melding of those things.
Because
pre-sci-fi was always very serious.
Oh, my God. I love Dune. But yes, so serious.
Literally very dry.
You guys, that's a desert joke. Arrakis, spice.
So my first little nugget of fun is that the concept of The Hitchhiker's Guide itself is a parody of Isaac Asimov's Encyclopedia Galactica from the Foundation novels.
Oh, my God. Of course it is.
Very obvious. Of course it is.
Oh, my God. I did. Thank you. Wow, that's huge. I read the Foundation novels probably 15 years after I'd read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I liked them.
Yeah.
But I did not know that. What else you got? I don't want to.
Well, in a good sci-fi, of course, like predicts the future. And I think the Hitchhiker's Guide itself, that's a Kindle. Like, in what way is that not a Kindle? You know?
Oh, right. Right, right. And many, you know what? And so many things are in the zeitgeist now that are from that book, from people who've never read it, maybe even never even heard of it. But one of the things I got out of the first reading was the thing about not being afraid if I thought you couldn't see me. Like, I can see you, but if I can't see you, I can't possibly be afraid
of you. Can't be seen. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's baby logic, right? Like, babies think we all have the same awareness. Like, there's a moment in your development. Like, if mom comes in the room and hides a set of keys in the couch and leaves, and dad comes in the room, the baby thinks that dad knows what the baby knows because they don't understand the separation of people. So that theory is, I think, very much a baby theory. If I can't see you, you can't see me, and I'm not in danger.
I can't, right. I don't recommend you do it with a bear, but maybe, maybe you put a towel over your head, always have a towel, and see what happens. Maybe the bear won't notice you because you will no longer see the bear.
One of my favorite concepts is actually, it's from one of the later novels, someone else's problem. Things that are invisible to you because they're not your fucking problem. That concept has served me very well in life. You know, people sometimes will try to give you their problems and you're like, this isn't mine and I can't see it.
But I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah. So let's talk theory. Oh, let's talk references in the mass culture. So, a lot of musicians, a lot of British musicians, shocker, have Hitchhiker's Guide references. I think the most famous one is Radiohead's Paranoid Android, which is about your Marvin.
Marvin, the Paranoid Android, the most Marvin depressed the android, who was right there at the restaurant at the end of the universe. Mm-hmm. But he was also there on the Improbability Drive. Wasn't he on the ship?
Yeah, they always find a way to stick Marvin back in there as a grim foil for Zaphod Beeblebrox's mindless optimism. But Coldplay has a couple songs named after, they have a song called 42, and the band Level 42, also Hitchhiker's Guide reference. Mm-hmm, 42 is a number used in Lost.
Okay.
And in a really nice meld, the X-Files, Fox Mulder lives in apartment 42. I also love the X-Files.
So okay. That could be a future episode. Andy loved the X-Files. I never watched the X-Files, but I understand that there was a lot of shipping going on about the X-Files. And
a whole lot.
Whole lot. People really wanted those two people to do it.
That was my first shipping, actually. That was my first online ship reading experience.
Okay.
Was all manner of combinations of people from the X-Files. Because it was pretty popular. Okay.
So
now Coldplay also has a song called Don't Panic. And of course, Don't Panic, the crummiest one is that Elon Musk sent a Tesla into space with Don't Panic written on the dashboard.
Right. Elon Musk is probably my age, maybe a little bit older. And he must have hit a very, he probably read this exactly the correct time as well, but yeah, didn't get sort of the positive messages of Arthur Dent. You know, yeah, Arthur Dent, I don't know, that's sort of the quintessential loser.
Yeah.
But by the time he learns to fly, I think he's amazing, quite honestly.
Yes. No, and the book, yeah, he develops quite a lot as a character. I don't know if anybody else does, right?
No, I don't, probably not. I do like, there's several things, like 42 being the answer to the universe and everything. Mm-hmm. But you can only know the answer or the question.
Right.
And that is all. And
if you, yeah.
Right?
If you Google what is the answer to life, the universe, and everything, Google will show you 42. Like, in a, not but just if, in a result. It will give you a calculator, and it says 42. It's very funny.
That is very funny. But if you Google what is the question,
yeah,
you will not get an answer. Because answer. Douglas Adams did not tell us. Because he had told us the answer,
right,
he could not give us the question.
What would be the fun in that?
There's no fun in that. And philosophically, it's kind of huge that he doesn't even pretend to, because previous science fiction, mm-hmm, will yes, tell you the answer. They will tell you the question. They'll tell you their opinion, and they'll let you know all of it. And that doesn't, and I don't mean that in a belittling way. Thoroughly loved A Canticle for Leibowitz, but which I was wondering, do you think Zaphod Beeblebrox was based on the final character in Canticle for Leibowitz?
That is an interesting question.
Because remember, at the end, there is a mutant who has, mm-hmm, a second, who has a baby, mm-hmm, grown out of him. And that baby, spoiler alert, Canticle for Leibowitz lovers, is Jesus.
Let's see, things that influenced Douglas Adams. Yeah, let's go that way. So the whole thing was supposed to be, he was writing for Doctor Who.
And all right,
all the ideas that went into Hitchhikers were kind of rejected from Doctor Who as being a little not Doctor Who-ish, you know?
What? That is, yeah, so great.
That's the origin story of the whole thing.
Because Doctor Who was occasionally very funny,
mm-hmm,
but not
absurd.
Not comedy, right? And not comedy, right, science fiction,
right?
So, huh?
Yeah. So, I had another amazing point to make about it.
Before you make that point,
I'm ready.
Let's find out if there is an ad. There could be an ad here. Let's find out for a quick second.
Mm-hmm.
Was there one? And if there was, were you interested?
Write us and let us know.
Let me know, Jackie Cation, to let me know if there was an ad there. Spotify just put some in. I don't have a lot to say. So hopefully they're not gross. Okay, bye. What was, you had a profound thought. I thought I would interrupt you in the middle of it.
No, you were talking about that his humor is a lot of snark, and that's absolutely true. But the other, the deeper thing of his writing that took me a long time to grok is, and it was actually the movie that taught me this, because the movie, they had to put a lot of other stuff and like move things around and find characters from other bits and pieces. That's hard to make a movie. Like, it was in development forever. Like,
right,
originally, like,
it really
Hugh
was.
Laurie was supposed to be Arthur. People have died who were supposed to be, but when I saw the movie, I'm like, oh, it's because the book is just like the plot is just enough to string together these amazing settings and happenstances and stories. The plot itself is thin as paper. Nothing happens really.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's just not a day of the life of a bunch of people in space.
Yeah. It's just ways to go from like one amazing, hilarious, ironic story to another, and like with very lavish descriptions. That's really what it is. He did say later on he was sorry that Trillian wasn't a stronger character. She doesn't get to do much.
We're all sorry that there aren't enough black characters and everything, and women are marginalized.
Right.
But that's because we're all raised. What is it? Somebody else's problem.
Yes. It was somebody else. I mean, you know, he was an upper crust Cambridge guy. I think he generally liked women, but I don't think it occurred to him at that time that they should do anything besides.
And literally, yeah. Civilization moves very, very slowly. That white woman mm-hmm. in Silver Lake is doing good work.
She's doing her best.
Yeah, she's genuinely trying to learn to be an anti-racist.
Yes. My favorite music trivia, and this one gets weird, is there's a band called The Damned. So this is where the gothic punk crossover is. There's a band called The Damned. The lead singer dresses like a vampire. You all know it. but they're also British. But on one of their early records, Machine Gun Etiquette, at the end of Smash It Up, there is a loop yes. of Peter Jones from the television, the author from the television series, saying, "Nibbled to death by it in a copy," over and over again.
Wow. That is a real deep cut. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So many questions.
Okay. Not enough
the
answers.
The Damned, the vampires, the album, the song. We keep going lower and lower into the dungeon. And then where was Nibbled to Death? That does sound vaguely familiar. And I've read the book several times, but I can't remember where that was.
I don't know that it was in the book. I think it may have just been in the TV series. It's not everything.
Okay.
Not everything right. was everywhere.
Not right. They patchworked and added.
Right.
Did you? I don't mean to sidetrack you here, because I have to say that I love the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I own the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it because I thought it had a really good heart, and it was also mm-hmm. very funny and sweet. It was not as funny as the first time I read the book.
No.
But I was also. It was, 20 years later, right? It was also, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that are funnier written, I think, than shown, like Eccentrica Galumbitz. I don't know why she was so big. I mean, I did like the movie. I do like the movie. I have seen it several times. The last time I saw it, I was waiting for mushrooms to kick in. That's a pretty good place to watch The Pecker's Guide. You know, just take some time. I got very great performances. Cute, funny, enjoyable. But
very enjoyable, yeah.
But you understand why it took so long to make,
yes.
because it's not that movie-ish. At some
right.
point, Johnny Depp was going to be Zaphod Beeblebrox, which would have been very strange. Robert Downey Jr. was considered. Will Ferrell, which I don't think I would like.
No. Will Ferrell.
Me personally.
Yeah. It's, I don't know if you ever saw essentially the Mexican Blazing Saddles that Will Ferrell produced, directed, started.
Huh.
And it was Casa... It's my Spanish is non-existent, you guys. It involves ordering a burrito. And so allow me to do Will Ferrell and look it up. Casa, it's a movie. Casa Mi Padre. Casa de Mi Padre. Mm-hmm. And Casa de Mi Padre is almost a perfect movie with, we've weeded off here, but Will Ferrell plays the lead mm-hmm. in in Casa de mi Padre. And I thought that that was the only problem with it. It was almost a perfect movie.
Right.
Because,
except for it happened to star Will Ferrell.
Well, he was too old. And he's kind of too big. He felt like it ought to have been more a younger man and possibly Mexican.
Why not? Why not that?
That felt like it was, I'm sure he meant to, but it was somebody else's problem. So I'll be using that over and over again throughout this entire thing.
Okay. Now, in Joan's family lore, Blazing Saddles was also something my father really like got me into. And my childhood nickname, Froggy, is from the bath scene with Hedley Lamarr. my father called me that for many, many years. Jim Carrey was also in early days a possible Zaphod Beeblebrox. I think he would have been great.
He would have been great, I think. Who did eventually play Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Sam Rockwell.
Oh, and he was great, actually.
And he was great.
He was
Sam
great.
Rockwell, great in everything. Just give him, let him dance, and it will be great.
Yes.
Okay, people who were considered to play Ford Prefects. Dan Aykroyd was in the running in the 80s. When this movie was kind of percolating, was first optioned. In talking to the group, he sent them his idea for Ghostbusters, and then that movie was made instead. So Hitchhiker's Guide actually lost out to Ghostbusters, which is also fine.
Fine.
A fine thing.
There's other great, fun, weird movies in the world, and Ghostbusters is one of them. I would posit that the current reboot of Ghostbusters is actually quite nice with the children. And there's a sequel coming up, which I have not seen.
The Lady Ghostbusters that everybody got so upset about, I really loved. And
I like that as well. Yes.
Yeah. But a relevant news like thing is in my neighborhood of Silver Lake on Halloween, I saw a little girl, maybe 10, dressed as a Ghostbuster, and I nearly cried.
Yes.
In the middle of the street. It was so good. Yeah.
Love it.
Representation is important, you guys. Casa de mi Madre.
It turns out.
So here's some deep triv about. So the Earth is referred to in maps as Sector ZZ9, like plural Z Alpha. I'm fucking it up. One, that was the Douglas Adams fan group named themselves that. But ZZ9, the code is in England, it's someone with no fixed abode. That's the code they use in postal stuff.
Oh.
And so so Trillian and Arthur are both like ZZ9 is part of the thing because they don't have a home anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's gone.
It's
been blown up because of a bypass.
A bypass. Other cultural things. I mean, this is getting to be a little bit older, but Alta Vista used to have the language engine Babelfish.
Oh, did they?
And of course, Babelfish is named after Tower of Babel, but then other things were named after
I always
after
said Babelfish. Babel. Am I wrong?
I think.
The Tower of Babel? Babylon?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Because it was from Babylon.
I've probably said it both ways.
Well, we can see it from both sides now. That's me doing some lyrics, you guys. I have some musical knowledge.
She's
nowhere
got a
near
of,
Virginia Jones.
She's got a handful of musical knowledge.
You get a chance, by the way. I want you to go to Badinia, Badinia. I want you to do that on TikTok and watch some real deep cuts. It's like watching a 2-minute episode of The Dork Forest when all of a sudden, with graphics, by the way, I mean, this is on YouTube, but she has figured out a way to use the green screen behind her on the TikTok.
Yeah,
I don't know how to do it. It's fun.
You know, TikTok, actually, I did Ron Lynch's show last night, Crapshoot, And so for people who have not seen it, which is a couple people, I guess, it's a show where there's a bunch of characters and crazy things happen. And there's a game show element. And the only instructions you get from Ron are no stand-up. He books stand-ups on the show, but then you cannot do stand-up. He's not interested in it. And for the most part on his show, he's not interested.
You know what? I've seen that. I've seen that in person where Ron Lynch is not interested in stand-up comedy.
Not interested in stand-up, no.
Yeah.
But I put together a character, and it was very improv-oriented. And I really think that 2 years of writing single-person sketch on TikTok has really helped me. Like,
yeah, because that's what it is. It's single-person sketch.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Okay, you'll like this one. Dorks,
okay.
Saddle Up. And
saddle
many people
up.
Have figured this out on their own. But the Borg, Resistance is Futile, is inspired by the Vogons' Resistance is Useless.
Oh, really?
Let's get Trekkie with it.
Yeah, that seems a Borg. The cricket people. Right? Are you talking about the? Oh no, the Borg are the Borg poets.
The Borg. Oh well, the Vogons are the poets.
That's yes, it.
The green people who blow up the Earth. The very terrible poets who are kind of rubbery. I thought the Vogons looked great in the movie. Exactly what a Vogon was in my head. I'm like, yes, that's
And they are the people who blew up the Earth. Now,
yes.
What are the name of the people who invented cricket?
Oh, well, their planet
when
was
they
cricket.
See the, oh, the planet was called cricket?
And I think that they were just people of cricket.
It was all clouds.
K-R-I-K-K-I-T. Yeah.
Ah, there we go. And then the clouds go away. They see the rest of the universe and they say, it's going to have to go.
It's going to have to go. We don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were not bothered by it until the moment they became aware that it existed. Okay, now I want to go one step deeper. I want to go one step deeper. So I'm Gen X. You're Gen X. We're Gen X. We're old as shit, right?
Yep. Gen X.
We've been alive for a million years. And we've been rebellious every step of the way. We will not be told.
Right. We are human is what you're saying. Go. Yes.
Right. But so Gen X remembers before your fancy newfangled video games, sometimes you would play an interactive fiction game on the computer.
And oh, wait, like the games where you had to type? You're talking about typing? The typing
your Zorks,
games?
Your adventures.
I did a Lord of the Rings one. I died every time next to Old Man Willow.
So Douglas
Tom
Adams-
Bombadil never came. Anyway, go.
So Douglas Adams, he was literally a nerd. He bought the first Apple computer sold in the UK. And Stephen Fry bought the second. And
literally the first. Okay.
The first and the second. Yeah, literally the first. And so he was always interested in telling stories in different ways. And so he made an interactive fiction game out of Hitchhiker's Guide, which is incredibly deep, intricate, and difficult. Like I never ever.
Right.
I played it during lockdown. I replayed it during lockdown because what the fuck else are you going to do?
Why not?
That was the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it made a lot of things made a lot more sense to me than they did when I was a kid. But I played a lot of interactive fiction games. I played a lot of Zork and was really into, like, it was kind of weird. Like when they started getting graphics and stuff, I'm like, I like it the old way when it was just reading.
Oh, good. But, well, talk to me briefly about how he did this. Like, do you play Arthur Dent?
Yes, you play Arthur Dent. You wake up, you have a hangover, you become aware that there is a bulldozer in your yard, and it goes from there. And the eventual goal is to get a cup of tea. That's what you need to do. That's
oh,
the
wow.
end. of the game, but a lot of things have to happen before that. And it's like,
you can't get a cup of tea when you go to the bar to complain about the bulldozer.
Well, you can't get a cup of tea there, Jackie, because if you get a cup of tea there and you don't drink two beers, your body is not cushioned enough to survive the transfer to the Vogon ship, and you fall into a million atoms. Sorry.
Oh, well, thank you. It's because what happens is Ford Prefect shows up, and you have to hook, and he says,
I have to talk to you about something right away. So, yeah, it very much follows the plot of the book, but then there's a lot of other stuff.
Arthur Dent. This is an interesting...
I'm pausing because you're
like twist.
Freezing. Yeah.
And you're freezing up a little bit too, but
yeah. So I'm like, she's probably talking.
You can talk. It's tell me about like the different scenes in the text video game. Actually, I kind of want to. How far did you get?
Oh, I've solved it. Because Jackie, I cheated. Okay. Oh,
walk through. You're not wrong.
Walk through. I love it. What I like to do with the games is I spend a good couple of months farting around, but then in the end, I do want to solve it. And usually I'm not going to have the patience to do that without help. And I just feel that this helps me enjoy all the facets of the game. I am consuming it, right? I will do the puzzles. But yeah, I might need help. So I did do a walkthrough. It was very enjoyable. I got much, much further than I did when I was 12.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
But one of the things I like about it is that he didn't just give them the novel and say, go crazy. Like, he wrote it.
Okay.
And so it's very much his flavor. There's new jokes, new stuff happens. And also, he also liked other interactive fiction games. So there is a reference in the Hitchhiker's Guide to Adventure, the first interactive fiction game, because there's a part in Adventure. It's pretty early in the game. You're in a maze of twisty passages, all alike, you make these turns and turns, and it keeps telling you you're in a maze of twisting passages, and they all look alike to you, and you're like, well, it's just saying the same thing, but there's tiny differences. That's the only way you're going to get out. And when Douglas Adams did it, he said, there's nothing you can taste, nothing you can see, nothing you can hear, nothing you can feel, nothing you can smell. You do not even know who you are. And then that's his bit. But it's the same kind of puzzle. I like that a lot.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing.
But to finish the game, if anybody – sorry, it was a spoiler alert for a 40-year-old game. To finish the game, you have to be able to hold an idea of a thing and a not idea of a thing at the same time. And that busts the computer that keeps you out of a room. Like, it blows the computer's mind, and that's how you do it. It's wonderful.
I've played a couple of these different games. What are they called as a genre again?
Interactive fiction.
Interactive fiction games, because now you make me want to go and do that Lord of the Rings game again.
Yeah.
And find the walkthrough, because I want to know what I did wrong. Yeah.
Right. What other games have you played in that genre?
It was that Lord of the Rings ones. I also played a Mac game that was, you were a doctor. Mm-hmm. So there was some graphics, there was some pixelated graphics where you had to use the mouse and do an appendectomy. And I always killed the patient. Always.
Well, and that's a good way to find out you shouldn't be a doctor.
Good way to find out that a mouse isn't a sensitive enough object to do a thing.
Yeah. It was all text. And then we went to the ones where there was some graphics. I played an X-Files interactive fiction game crossover again that had occasionally a grainy photo of an alien autopsy.
Okay.
I did not solve that one. Did not care enough to do a walkthrough.
Fair enough. Did not Fair care. Enough. It's
but yeah. And then it was the graphic games where you were on an adventure and you would just like take your cursor over every part of the screen until you found like the mushroom that had a fairy in it or whatever.
Well, Dungeon of Doom was a Mac Classic game. It had I had 2 megs of RAM in my Mac Classic, as I like to call it, both megs of RAM.
All two.
And then, but Dungeons of Doom, it's now available. I mean, you can get it to play on just as a thing online, but it was, it had text on the side, and then it was just a bird's eye view of, a dungeon. And so, and there were, you would find these scrolls that had hints. And one of the hints was the 40th level is death. And find the orb and all these things. And so you'd go up, you'd fight monsters, you'd eat food, you'd fight monsters, you'd find better weapons and all the things that you want to in a game. You would find out what the names of the monsters were in the tiny text thing next to you. Mm-hmm. You'd get to the 40th level, somewhere in between the 39th and the 40th level. You wouldn't know that you picked it up, but you have been given an orb. And once you've been given an orb, the wizard shows up because he'd like his fucking orb back, at which point you didn't know what to do, or I didn't know what to do for a long time. So then I finally figured out that you have to run back down 39 sets of stairs.
Yeah.
And the orb allows you to leave the dungeon. And that's
there is always an element of like a reasonable person would not bother to do this. But maybe that's what makes the text games what they are. He did another one. He was involved with another one called Leather Goddesses of Phobos that was also funny and also full of jokes that I did not get as a child.
Of Phobos?
Yeah.
How are you spelling that?
That's spelled Phobos.
Wouldn't have gone there. Wouldn't have gone there with the PH.
wouldn't have guessed that. But yeah, I played a lot of those things, and the fact that he did one was not my first, it was not my last, but it was a very rich experience for me. The first interactive fiction game, text-based, that I played was a game called Dracula on the TI-99-4A.
Okay. Ooh, 4A.
And it was a game console that almost was a home computer. Almost. You could write BASIC on it.
Okay.
Yeah. You could make a bunch of things appear on a bunch of screens, but I think it had about 8 gigs of memory. And so in order to play this game, you had to at one point plug a tape player into the computer and play.
That's in war games.
Yes. And it goes, here.
Yep.
And talks computer talk. Yep.
Yep.
And that comes back. And then Dracula, I have to tell you something about the Damned. So the Damned were the first UK punk band to release a single. They beat the Clash. And Dave Vanian, the lead singer, just decided that he was a vampire and he had like a white streak in his hair and is still a very fetching gentleman.
At this late date, he's still very handsome.
Oh yes. Yes. Very handsome.
Okay.
I believe he may live in Southern California. His wife, her family's from Downey, Patricia Morrison. She's also a very great musician, but so, when the Damned formed, you know, punk was all over London, and then you have Bauhaus that are kind of a post-punk band. They were basically like a gothic glam band is what I understand now.
Okay.
And at one point, Dave Vanian tried to fight the lead singer of Bauhaus, Peter Murphy, because he said, "I'm already doing the vampire thing. I'm already doing it. You cannot also do it." But what he I called this punk rock vampire thing, but he didn't know that there was room for everybody to be a vampire, and it was goth.
Oh, so many vampires now. Vampires available to absolutely to babies, to the elderly, everybody's. Gail Carriger, do you know her?
No.
She writes she's been on the program. She's a delight, quite honestly. She has written
The Parasol Protectorate was the name of the first series of hers that I read. Mm-hmm. And they're YA novels. And they're the Parasol Protectorate is about essentially it's a steampunk world that has vampires and werewolves and all the things.
Fine.
But they're integrated into society. And the vampires mm-hmm. are very powerful because they're very old. And they've had time to accumulate some shit and some power. And they're also kind of scary. And the werewolves are also very powerful. They have clans because they travel in packs. And the Parasol Protectorate is essentially, it's a dirigible school, a school on a big floating balloon that mm-hmm. teaches young women how to go out into society and also poison.
It's
pretty great. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and she addresses a lot of different social issues because that is the point and purpose of all science fiction, of all comic books,
yeah,
of all mysteries and horror and all the things. It's a chance for other people to have voices, to talk about what is good or bad about society and what could use some work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever think about werewolves? And of course, you know, they would travel in packs. Do you ever think that coyotes are just dogs that didn't sell out?
Oh, the selling out of coyotes. There is I think it's called Sharp Teeth. Have you read that one?
Yes.
Or heard about that one? It's in an open prose.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy read it and then kind of insisted that I read it.
Sometimes marriage is like that.
Toby Barlow is the author, and I believe it's called Sharp Teeth. Yeah, it is. And it's about a bunch of were dogs who play cards and live in Altadena, I think. And they travel the Los Angeles area, not really solving crime. But right. they get into a mystery.
Having adventures, yeah.
They have adventures and they get into some sort of mystery they don't want any part of. They're just trying to live their lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of good stuff out there, you guys.
Pretty fun. Pretty fun. Yeah. What's your favorite vampire movie?
I don't like them.
Okay.
I'll tell you, I once saw because they scare me. I once saw the comedy vampire movie, which was
Once Bitten. Jim Carrey.
It was actually supposedly a comedy, but it was genuinely terrifying.
Okay.
And it was about the shooting of Dracula. It was a movie within a movie.
Yes. And Eddie Izzard is in it.
What is it called?
And it's called Shadow of the Vampire. Is that
That's
what it is?
It's called Thank Shadow you. Of the Vampire.
Ding, ding,
I was told
there are scary moments in it. There are scary.
I was
scary.
Told that it was a comedy, and I did not sleep that night. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
And I still think about it. So a huge lightweight when it comes to tension and scariness. I have never read another book besides A Prayer for Owen Meany.
Okay.
Because that guy is a very good writer and creates a great deal of tension that I don't want any part of.
Can't handle it.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I did see Cider House Rules, though. Okay.
Oh, now, a lot of people, like, because you're goth, people are like, well, obviously you love Disney and horror movies. And I don't like either of those things.
Oh, interesting.
But because I can't handle gore. I love tension. I will watch pretty much any vampire movie, but if it's too gory, I cannot the green room where, Captain Picard is running a group of meth fueled Nazis in small town, Oregon. I didn't sleep. I like stood trembling in my kitchen afterwards. Cause it was just so, it was very well done. It was a very good movie. So visceral, cannot handle. But I find that vampire movies sometimes are a little more like it's a little more subtle. Like it's like you know, you can tell people are having sex because they have a slip on. Like, you know, something's happening, but it's sometimes a little more, it's not as graphic.
There's some subtlety. Oh, fair enough. Right. Fair enough. You like a subtle vampire film.
But, but I think the interesting thing, the vampire story is, it's the story of the addict, right? And I think that's one thing that makes it very sexy, right? There's something that they need to live, but it's also, to me, a story about how life, that life is too long.
Right.
What do you do after you've read all of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books? You know, what
right.
do you do?
Like, right. You're like, is there anything else on Netflix? And you can't like literally people joke about how they've watched everything on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you had watched everything on
literally
Netflix.
Watched everything on Netflix.
Yeah.
What would you even be doing there? Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, it's like I'm bored of life now and I haven't even made it to 100 yet.
Exactly. Early days. Let me say this, Virginia Jones. It's been an hour. This has been fascinating. We got to have you back on a little more often. You guys, we've discussed, Virginia Jones, stand-up comic, Badinia, Badinia, correct? Yep. And so go find her doing stand-up comedy. Watch her TikTok. Just throw cash at her next time you see her. And be supportive. So thank you so much for doing the show, Virginia.
Thank you, Jackie. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was with Virginia Jones, and it's a real classic.
Ooh.
We discussed several of the iterations of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, well, I love that.
Yes, she read it when she was a child, like 10 or 11.
Okay.
When her father gave it was like, how did she put it? She said, I got Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He got Restaurant at the End of the Universe. And they started reading them at the same time.
Right.
He must have already read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
He must have.
Right. Because he said, whoever finishes first owes the other one ice cream.
Oh.
And she said, the way that worked was he always bought ice cream because he was the adult in that situation.
Right. Right. Right.
She was 10. But so she read it and she loved it. And so... Actually, the first, I would say, 10 minutes, we discussed Jane Austen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's taken to kind of a deep dive into Jane Austen.
So besides Virginia Jones, what's the connection between Jane Austen and...
It's in the zeitgeist, it turns out. later, we sort of hammered together how that sort of flowed.
Right, maybe some irony. I don't know.
Right, dry sarcasm.
Dry sarcasm. Some British humor.
British humor. That's exactly how we hammered together that, the fact that they linked it all. She did. And then, so it was Jane Austen, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which led to interactive fiction games.
Okay.
Which she played a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy interaction fiction game.
Well, it was one of the first.
And it was so hard.
Yes.
And it turns out the purpose of it, she told me two different things about the purpose of it. The purpose of it is that you drink a cup of tea.
Yes.
Uninterrupted. And the other one was that you hold two thoughts, separate thoughts, together simultaneously.
Okay.
And I was like, well, how? Because I told her the one interactive game I ever played was the Lord of the Rings one.
Mm-hmm.
And I always was killed by Old Man Willow. I never made it. Tom Bombadil never shows up.
Right.
And she said that she actually cheated and went to the walkthrough. Like, she played it for months.
Right. 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 If it was the original one, the old, Infocom, one.
I believe so.
Infocom. I think maybe, I don't remember now, actually, that may be wrong. but yeah, it's really, really hard. And if you don't make the right choices at the towards the beginning of the game, you will lose at the end of the game and not know why.
Right. Well, I told her, I said, well, why can't you just get a cup of coffee when you go to the pub when Ford Prefect shows up? And she goes, well, and then she explained something very sounded scientific about how all your atoms just dissolve.
Because you haven't had the two beers first.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, yeah. You got to slam the beers. Otherwise, yeah.
Slam the beers.
And that was true in the books.
It was true in the books. And then her other thing was she talked about how it was integrated into how it's out in the world. Like she talked about a punk band called The Damned.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with their work.
I have heard of them. I don't know that I've heard anything by them, but I've heard of them.
Well, let me say, Rangers of the Dork Forest, who have just listened to this show, know a little bit more about The Damned.
And she's pretty gothy.
She's super gothy.
So.
There was talk of vampires and goth as well. And but The Damned, I guess, had several references to...
Hitchhikers?
To Hitchhikers.
Okay.
And The Hitchhikers, the Don't Panic, the Hitchhiker's Guide in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was actually based on the book that's in the Foundation series.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's a series of books that I've been meaning to read for all of my life.
Oh, I read it. It's not bad.
Okay.
You know, it's been hacked so bad that it's hard to, I don't want to raise any expectations because the world has raised expectations.
Right, right.
And then the Borg, the cricket, you know, cricket who sees the sky and they go, it's going to have to go, the planet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So they said resistance is useless. And the speculation is resistance is futile. It was taken from that.
Oh, okay.
So it was full of little nuggets like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Virginia Jones, of course, always fun to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
And super smart.
Super smart.
And her TikTok is amazing.
Mm-hmm,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
And she, it's Badinia, at Badinia, everywhere. B-A-D-I-N-I-A.
Right. It's Virginia, but with bad. Bad-inia.
Right. And whenever I type Virginia,
mm-hmm.
the V is right next to the, for some reason, I end up typing.
Oh.
Virginia. Yeah.
But Virginia.
Virginia. So she just went with Badinia, I guess. But it was super fun. It makes me want to play some interactive fiction game and or at least watch the walkthrough of Lord of the Rings and see where I went wrong.
Right, you could do that. If you do play, I will give you the spoiler alert. If you do end up playing the old Hitchhiker's Guide game, make sure you put the babblefish in your ear.
Oh, right, right. Otherwise, you're doomed. One would imagine.
Right. If you don't put the towel over the drain pipe, the babblefish will go down the drain, and you will not have a chance to put the babblefish in your ear.
Okay, and. Do you think the babblefish was also from Star Trek with Khan and the one eel that was native? Okay.
No, predated it.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because did Khan come up before 1979? Because that's when Hitchhikers was written, published.
Right. No, Khan is later.
Right. So I thought Khan might have taken it from Hitchhikers.
No. Khan got it from earwigs. Those things that...
Okay.
That, are called earwigs, and they look exactly like those things in the in the movie, except much smaller.
I want everything to be linked. It turns out the ankle bone is connected to the shin bone.
Right.
What I like to say at the end of these little bonuses is I love you.
Aw, and I love you.
All right.
That's convenient.
Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?